One of the major stories in the latter part of this year revolved around a trip taken by the Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams in a blacked-out van in 2013. He travelled with the sons of murdered prison officer Brian Stack to meet a senior member of the IRA in order to gain more information about the circumstances around their father's death. Now, as the story developed, details emerged about conditions in Portlaoise prison in the 1970s and 80s, where paramilitaries were held and Brian Stack served. Noel Toohey also served as a prison officer there during that time, and when he came in to talk to us, I began by asking him about whether the characterisation of Portlaoise prison as being an awful place where the prison officers were constantly in battle with the Provisional IRA and other Republicans for control was fair and true.
Outside events impacted on what was going on in Portlaoise, because the hunger strike, for example, impacted. Obviously, the Provisional IRA weren't happy about Bobby Sands dying, but that impacted. And it lent itself to maybe confrontation of a verbal nature more than anything else. But it wasn't a nice place to work at that particular time. I worked there for 30 years. I joined in 79, retired in 2009. And they were probably the bad years, yes. It was tense. And the atmosphere wasn't great. And most of us weren't looking forward to going into work like you might be. But
Was that what it was like? You know, your daily life? Your shift starts at whatever time and you just weren't really looking forward to that start time.
Yeah, and our shifts were long, and indeed the hours we were expected and forced to work were very long. My basic shift was 8 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. and I could do that for 30 days on the trot, and if I'd be required, I'd be told I had to do it. Some of the guys tell me stories that work for 2-3 months without a day off. You missed your kids playing football at the weekend. You missed the things that most families have.
Mm-hmm. Crazy regime doing 30 days back.
I suppose it's a bit like that's what we went into, that's the job we took on, and we tried to change it. I was heavily involved in the union for my 30 years in service. It took a strike in 1988 to change it, but we did change it, I think, eventually.
So let's go back to what was going on inside the prison at that time. How much control did the Republican prisoners have in Portlaoise?
They had a lot of control of their own environment. The bottom line, as far as prison staff and I think management were concerned, was containment was paramount. First, if some guy escaped from an open centre, it's not going to bring down the government. It mightn't even make 2 inches of a column in the paper. But if one of these guys escaped, it could be all hell to pay, you know what I mean? And they did escape from Mount Giant. They did escape from Portlaoise in the mid-70s, and it was an escape attempt in the 80s. And politically, it'd be embarrassing. So one of the main jobs we had, if you like, was ensure that they didn't get out, basically. And if they had a little certain amount of control within their own environment, so be it.
So you'd give them some leeway in the hope or in the knowledge that they weren't going to try and break out because they had certain freedoms inside, is that fair to say?
Yeah, they had different freedoms than the ODCs, as they call themselves, the Ordinary Decent Criminals. They wouldn't wear prisoner clothes, they didn't clean landings, that sort of thing, the Provisional IRA. They had their own political system where they'd fall in at night as a military thing. But
was that difficult, though, because you have to have some sort of position of authority and yet they're almost in control of their landing?
Well, I wouldn't say they're in control of the landing. They go in at set times, they come out at set times. We unlocked them and locked them up again. So the control was illusionary, if you like. Mm-hmm. They thought they were in control, but they weren't in control. The fact of the matter is they were unlocked the same as every prisoner in the country at a certain time in the morning. And they were locked up the same as every other prisoner in the country at a certain time at night.
Tell me about the friction then that would arise when you and your colleagues had to search the prisoners and the cells.
Yeah, but that was a tense one. I mean, there's no point in saying it's one of the more unattractive parts of our job that you had to go in and search a prisoner. But you can understand the reasons for it too. There could be guns, explosives, there could be basically anything. And as it transpired during the escape attempt, it proved that guns had got into the prison and explosives had got into the prison.
And this was in 1985?
This was in 1985, yeah.
Can you tell us more about that?
Well, it was a Sunday morning. I was thankfully off work. I came in when I heard the alarm going off. I lived close enough that I could actually hear the alarm in the prison. And a number of prisoners, including Martin Ferris and Tommy McMahon and several other prisoners, had got as far as the main gate, which would be the gate that you'd see if you drive past the old Portlaoise prison in the morning, this iron gate. They'd got there, got through, they had acquired what looked like prison officers' clothes. It was just the colour, but when you looked at them closely, obviously they weren't. They'd acquired guns. and they used explosives, and they actually locked themselves into the prison. But there was a lock on the big gate, and they blew the lock into the gate, so nobody could get in or out. So it was a botched attempt at an escape.
And then the doors prior to that big gate, they had duplicate keys, am I right?
They had duplicate keys to some of the gates, but they had guns, which would force you to open the gate, to tell you we're going to shoot you if you don't open the gate. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys got left behind, and he had a gun, which he trained on a chief officer and pulled the trigger 3 or 4 times. Luckily, the calibre of bullet didn't suit the gun, and it didn't go off. Jammed. He would have been killed. There's no doubt about that.
How did they get away with getting Semtex and guns and duplicate keys into the prison? How did that happen?
If I had the answer to that, I wouldn't be sitting here now. I honestly don't know. But
were you all in trouble after that?
Yeah. Well, there was a little thing of, geez, who could one of our own have done it? You know what I mean? There was this thing, because you have to understand, as a prison officer, you look after each other when you're on a landing. I'm watching this guy's back and he's watching my back. I have to trust him. Trust is hugely important, as you can imagine. If I have to go into an area where there's 20, 30 prisoners with one other guy that I know is going to hit the alarm, you have to trust them. And I suppose there was questions asked at that stage. But apparently some of it was coming in timber. So one poor provost suffered because of it. They sent over timber to be checked by the prison officers, the tradesmen, to cut up the timber. When they cut it up, all this powder started falling out in the middle of it. So that's how they were getting it in. But
very tense time, I would imagine, for you, for your family as well. I mean, did it impact your life outside? Did you ever feel intimidated outside going about your normal personal life?
After Brian Stack was murdered, and we were all advised to check our cars, under our cars, as before we started the car in the morning. This reminded me of what our fellow prison officers in Northern Ireland were going through at the time. They lost many prison officers, many policemen as well. And it just brought it home to me. This shouldn't be part of my job. I'm working for the state. All my fellow prison officers are working for the state, irrespective of their rank. And we don't deserve this. We're doing a job. And I always like to think that I personally did the job to the best of my ability. Always thinking that this prisoner could be my son, could be my brother, and treat him as though he was. And that was a huge majority of prison officers did that. And I think the killing of Brian Stack, the murder of Brian Stack, really had a huge impact on morale with prison officers throughout the country.
What was he like, Brian Stack? Because we hear he was a ruthlessly tough prison officer. Is that a fair description?
No, ruthlessly I don't think is. He was definitely a brave prison officer. You know, everybody has I worked in the my section dealt with the union to a lot. I would meet Mossy Stack a lot. Mossy Stack was...
That was his nickname, was it, Mossy Stack?
Sorry, yeah, would have been known as Mossy. Brian Stack was his name. But I met Mr. Stack only 2 days ago. This is my community was affected. I worked for the state, proud to work for the state, so did Mossy Stack. And I would not call him a ruthless man, but I would call him a fearless man.
And can you tell us more about that fearlessness? I mean, how did you witness his fearlessness in operation? What was he like?
He was the highest ranking uniformed prison officer in the state. To sum it up, I'd say he would not ask you to do anything he wouldn't do himself. Every army has generals who sit behind and dictate, but he wasn't. He was a guy that if there was trouble, if, for example, there was a riot situation potential, he wouldn't send you in first. He'd go in himself. Mm-hmm. I have to say that from Mossy Stack.
Was there always a power struggle between Brian Stack and his management colleagues and the Provisional IRA in particular? As a struggle for power and control.
I think where you have political prisoners, as they call themselves, you know, you're always going to have that. Because they always want to distinguish themselves from the ODCs, from the ordinary prisoners. They have to have that differentiation. We're doing this for a cause. I have my own views on that too, but yes, there is always going to be tension between management and prisoners in a political situation. Of course there is.
You didn't see them as prisoners of war or political prisoners then, given what you're saying?
No, I certainly don't see them as and these are guys I've met on numerous occasions, in the Dáil indeed, some of them, and I've met them on the street. I've never had a trouble or an ounce of trouble with them. Obviously, they have their beliefs, but as far as I'm concerned, they weren't political prisoners. The person who walked up behind Brian Stack at 11 o'clock at night and he'd gone about his business over at the stadium and put a gun to the back of his head and shot him is not a political prisoner, as far as I'm concerned. He would be a fellow that would probably fit into Hitler's Nazi army more than Brian Stack or anybody else.
Because that comment was made, wasn't it, by Martin Furris, or it was repeated rather, he says, from a Prison Officers Association meeting, and he said that he repeated it from that meeting, that he didn't come up with it. But
I have to say, I think it's appalling that any politician elected to the Dáil would use language. Does he forget what the Nazis actually did? Millions of Jews were gassed. And to compare anybody who's working for the state, Brian Stack or anybody else, to Nazis is despicable. And he should withdraw it. I think it's appalling. And I think if you're looking for people that were Nazis, in my context, the people who took out Jean McConville and murdered her and tortured her for 3 days and left her family with no mother, I think they could be people that would fit into the Nazi regime. It's disingenuous for him to say that this was said at a conference, because what is said at a conference, sometimes it comes from the heart and sometimes people don't think and want to know. He had 32 years to think about what he said about management in Portage Prison. He was elected by the people of this country, and I don't think most of those people would support what he's saying in relation to...
He was in there for 10 years, is that right, while you were there, over 10 years?
Approximately, yeah.
So you would have known him quite well then, Martin Furris?
I would have known him quite well. I worked in where he was incarcerated. I worked for years. Yeah, I met Martin Furris every day of the week.
Mm-hmm. He said the conditions were awful.
As in physical conditions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had a position, they had a place they could go to discuss anything. They had their own cell, they hadn't in cell sanitation, but they had their own cell, which wasn't something the rest of the country had, apart from the new prison, one or two new prisons. I remember when I started Mountjoy, you could have 3-4 prisoners in the one cell. So nobody's saying conditions in prisons were good, but they weren't good for us either. Because you remember, the prisoners' living conditions was our working conditions. I spent 12 and a half hours in the same environment as Martin Furris, and I never did anything. I was never found guilty of a crime. So it was in the interest of prison officers that prisoners' conditions were improved on a regular basis.
Did you meet him since? Have you met him?
I have met him since. We spoke for quite a long while. We did indeed, yeah. And there's no... There's
recently?
No, probably within the last 12 months.
I'd love to know where that conversation was.
I met him in the Dáil, and it was very... So we were talking about old times and we were talking about a bit of football and all the rest of it. He might remember this now, but I remember it distinctly. And I've met many of these provosts, guys that were provosts at the time. I don't know what to do now. They paid their debt to society. I have absolutely no problem. I have no problem talking to Martin Furris or anybody else.
But now, you've moved on with your life. You retired in 2009.
Yeah.
You're a Labour councillor now. But does that life ever leave you? That tough life inside in Portlaoise prison? How do you come through all of that?
Well, I had a wonderful wife. I wouldn't have got through without her, I'll have to say that, because I was heavily involved on both sides. I mean, I had my rows with management, senior management in Portlaoise Prison on a regular basis. It did impact on me, but it also impacted on what I believe in. And I believe in workers' rights. I believe that everybody, including prisoners, are entitled to whatever rights the country bestows on them. There's an onus on us to ensure that they get them. Community I miss, as I said to you before, I worked with these guys, I depended on these guys, not just to cover me, but maybe to save my life. And it has happened on numerous occasions when there'd be a riot situation developing. I miss that camaraderie that was there. But I do try to keep in touch, so I'm involved in the Association of Retired Prison Officers, and that gives me a conduit back to the prison officers, you know, because I found them in general to be the most wonderful group of guys you could ever meet, guys and girls.
Well, Noel, thank you for telling us about it. Noel Toohey.
You're welcome.